Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome to Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs, episode 208. I am one of your co-hosts, Sarah D. Bunting, and there ain't no other man I would co-host this podcast with besides Mark Blankenship. Hi, Mark.
Oh, schwa. You're too kind.
Oh, no, this is still happening.
The poison has seeped across the land. I know.
Greetings and schwalutations, everybody. Welcome back, all two of you who are still here. Mark, what are we contemplating today?
Well, our listener, Carrie D., wrote in asking if we would talk about a particular Christina Aguilera song. And then we thought, well, we want to talk about Christina Aguilera. We don't know if this is maybe the hottest song for us. So we then put the question to our patrons. We asked them in a very special poll, which of eight potential Christina Aguilera songs should we discuss on the show? And the patrons overwhelmingly voted for Ain't No Other Man. So, Carrie, I hope that you will roll with the punches. And I will tell you that I do quite like the song that you initially requested, which was her duet with Ricky Martin, Nobody Wants to Be Lonely. But I think in the grand scheme of things, I hope you will agree that this is also an excellent choice. And Carrie, we do thank you for adding your voice to the show. And we thank the patrons for voting. If you'd like to become a patron who votes on such crucial polls, and I do mean crucial, goddammit, you should join us at Patreon.
People.
It is. Join us at patreon.com/mastis. So, Sarah, point being, the song that we are talking about today is Ain't No Other Man, and I will go ahead and tip my hand now and say that I have also called for clips from two supporting songs because I feel like that this song actually represents the most interesting phase of Christina Aguilera's entire career. It's a lot of prologue, but I needed to say it.
All right. Should we hear a
clip? Yeah, I think before we go any further, here is a clip from Ain't No Other Man, which was released as the first single from her third album, Back to Basics. Sarah, if I may, I'd like to start from the negative and then work my way to the positive.
Sure.
Okay. So to crib a line that one often heard on the early years of Project Runway, I have no doubt of Christina Aguilera's talent, but I have often felt that there's a taste issue.
I knew where that was going.
We've seen enough episodes of Tim Gunn walking around. Yeah. But Christina Aguilera is a phenomenal singer. Like, there's really no doubt about that. But she has made, musically, some very, shall we say, dubious choices throughout her career. She seems she doesn't really have a musical identity, which can be fine. You know, I'm not saying that artists can't change. But she just never seems to, like, pick songs that let her stand out as anyone who can do anything other than just holler really loudly and really well.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly right.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, great, you can hit those notes, but so can lots of other artists. So what else can you do to tell me stories? And I feel like a lot of times she is just a maximalist. It's just the most sound. It's like her default mode. So in 2006, when this song came out, this was, like I said, the first single from Back to Basics. This song represented the possibility that she was going to be playing around with 40s big band sounds and how they could relate to what was then contemporary in pop music, which was that sort of loud, driving, pounding rhythm. And I think that for me, this is the most interesting her music has ever been because there is a distinct musical identity that she is either working with or playing against. And in Ain't No Other Man, I think it succeeds. I actually really, really like this song because all of those horns have that 40s flavor. But then the, like, stop, start, push, pull of the beat, the way that it keeps stopping and starting, it's like that is that sort of teasing mid-aughts dance energy. And I think that Christina, she's doing more with her voice than just hollering, although there is hollering. She's sort of weaving in and out of the beat, and she's making me buy her sexual attraction to this guy. And I just there's a flair and an energy here that I like. And I am sorry that this era didn't last longer, but it at least went deep enough that we can talk about a few more songs later. Sarah, what are your thoughts on Ain't No Other Man?
I'm so glad that you sort of couch this in terms of her identity, because here's my issue with the song. Like, it's two songs that are fighting with each other, and I don't like, I think they sort of like fight each other to a draw, but like, I like the construction of this a lot. The horns bring me to a sort of mid to late 60s Stax place. My understanding is that she considers Etta James vocally a huge influence. But having sort of been reminded of that while I was researching this episode, I was thinking about the differences between her and Ms. James as artists, namely that I can't even call Aguilera an artist exactly. She's a gigantic talent. She has a beautiful instrument. But I feel like Etta James understood how to slot her voice better in songs and arrangements. I don't think she was always trying to map this belting onto any kind of arrangement. I think she also knew when to like drop a shoulder and really drive into her own melodrama as a vocalist. And I feel like Christina Aguilera, having been doing it for quite a long time, even by this point that we're hearing, you can almost hear her at a certain point in this song go into kind of like autopilot, like growly belting, like this is what I do at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm all for working smarter, not harder. And again, this song is like fun and up, and like I love the arrangement. But I think that if she had a better sense of any identity as a storyteller, like you were saying before, she would have been like, actually, this arrangement is too fast because it's not making room for me. Or alternately, it's too slow. And I mean, there's something about the pacing that I think she's just fighting it, but she doesn't know why she's fighting it because she tells the stories that are put in front of her at maximum volume. That's what she sees as her job, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Maybe we're not giving her enough credit, but I don't think so. Again, it's not a bad song. I liked it. It just should have been way better. And if she were Adele, it would have been way better.
Yes.
Because Adele is a storyteller and Christina Aguilera is a newsreader.
I think that that is perfectly said. And I don't know that we need... It's possible that that is not how Christina Aguilera sees the way that she's working, but I do think it's the way it's coming across. And I have always felt that way. And, you know, that's why I think she has not remained as relevant as some other artists. I think that she just doesn't have the idiosyncrasy of artistry to keep her interesting as the sound that she wrote in on fades away. She hasn't been able to reinvent herself into anything else because it's like she just doesn't have that thing. And that's okay because honestly, sometimes all I want is to hear a really great singer singing a song in a way, in a serviceable way that's exciting. And like this song is that.
I rolled right into Genie in a Bottle after this. And it was like this arrangement, like as sick as we all were of that song at the time, I hadn't heard this in a while, and I was like, you know, I like it more than I did at the time because it isn't everywhere.
Yeah.
Just one of those things. But now that I'm listening to it, I can't help feeling the same way about it. And also that, like, I feel like even when she's at full melisma, we're still only getting like 85%. Like, could someone please put this woman next to either a single cello or in front of an entire orchestra or a big band and be like, you know, Thunderdome, sing for your life, literally.
Well,
like, show us some, like, get pissed off. Show us something else.
That, I think, is a perfect segue into one of the songs that I clipped, because around this time, she performed at a special Grammys ceremony. It was, I don't even really remember why, what it was. LL Cool J was there. They were something about vintage recordings. Anyway, she performed I Love You Porgy from Porgy and Bess. And to me, this live performance that she's never released officially indicates what might have been or where we could have gone together with her. So let's listen to that clip.
But when he comes, I know I'll have to go. I love you, Porgy. Don't let him handle me with his hands.
And, like, yes, there is a moment in every diva's life where she records an album of standards. See,
sure,
literally everyone. But hearing
Gaga
her sing
and Tony
is,
Bennett. Uh-huh.
Gaga. Yeah. Yeah, Tony Bennett and literally everyone. But
yeah,
Gaga
true.
Did it. Barbara Streisand has done it like 1,000 times. You know that at some point in her life, Adele is going to release an album called Cheek to Cheek. Like, it's
sure.
going to happen. But honestly, Sarah, hearing this, even this clip, I'm like, oh, right. The capacity to do that is in Christina Aguilera as a performer. But, like, maybe she just never had anyone else telling her that she should try that.
And but there's also still, at the very beginning, this moment that feels very performatively quiet.
Mm.
That she sort of opens the throttle and then closes it again. And it's like, we're watching this on TV, girl. We know
yeah.
who you are. You can, like, just tell us what happened. Don't,
right.
don't put a bunch of shit on it.
Oh, that makes me think about how, you know, someone who always makes me believe that she's in the moment of a song is Fantasia.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think now, like, that is maybe that's what I'm reaching for, because Fantasia is a great singer, but also Fantasia is a storyteller.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, there are many people who fit that bill. So, yeah, it's interesting how Christina Aguilera can only go so far. And again, it's like, that's OK. It's just I think it just guarantees that Christina Aguilera will always be someone that I like sometimes, but I'm never thrilled about.
Yeah. I wonder if she. You know, my sort of grand unifying theory of J-Lo is that every song or acting job is an equation to be solved.
Mm.
I don't know if that's true. Obviously, I don't know her, but
Swimona.
I feel like the difference between this, like, okay, Mariah Carey tries some things and they're a disaster, but at least like some effort to do something is happening, mm-hmm. even if it's not, even if we don't understand the language that it's in, because
right.
Mariah's gonna Mariah. But J-Lo just seems very like goal-driven, and it's like, you know, here's what we're doing. So if she had a standards album, it would have been like spat out by an algorithm from like a baseball front office, basically.
Yeah, here are the nine songs that you must have on your standards album. We have the data to prove it.
Yeah, and here's the one that everyone's going to think is a real departure, and it's like some Sinatra song that they keyed up like 2 octaves. Like, who can, I mean, uh-huh. But I just feel like on some level that's true of Christina Aguilera, but on another level it's not. Like, I feel like there is an artistic intellect in there, but it has consistently been easier for her to just like be served a menu of pre-existing options and pick off of them, because it's almost not that it's not work for her to sing, obviously, but that it's just like, well, this is what I do, and this appears to be similar to what I do and isn't going to alienate anyone. I don't know. Like, we're really putting a lot of psychoanalysis on her
that's true.
Maybe not warranted, but it's like, I just...
Well, you know, but I do
wonder what it would have been like for her to face off with Sinatra. Like,
yeah.
In person, that would have been amazing.
I wonder how much of this has to do with the fact that her first work was on the Mickey Mouse Club. You know, like maybe something about being
that
in that machine.
That is an excellent point.
Maybe that machine shaped her artistic sensibility in a way that Justin Timberlake, when he started working with Timbaland, was able to break out of. I don't know that Christina Aguilera has ever worked with someone who is as brilliant as Timbaland. So maybe she has never been pushed out of that Mickey Mouse Club vibe.
Well, and I mean, if you also look at, I mean, Britney was a Masketeer too, right?
Yeah, she sure was.
So, I mean, this is an extremely small sample size, but you have to wonder, like, what the boy Mouseketeers felt like they were entitled to try versus the girls.
That's a good point. Because Carrie Russell was in that general class and Ryan Gosling, but they aren't singers. So that's like, well, Ryan Gosling was in La La Land, but I stand by my point. But I think that it's interesting. It's like the packaging of young female pop stars at this time, especially.
Sure.
And it makes me think about how divergent Miley Cyrus has now become. Her art is so interesting. And like, she's like trying 100 different things and she sounds great most of the time. And I don't love everything she makes, but I'm always intrigued by her. That is not the road that Christina Aguilera went down. Okay,
yeah.
Fine. But still.
No, it's really not. Like, she always looks great. This song is about her, I believe, still husband, Jordan Bratman. And it's like, him? I mean, he's fine. But it's like, yeah, I mean, not everybody is trying to be like David Byrne or Brian Eno.
Right.
Or
right.
Adele or Annie DeFranco or even really anything. That it's like, I go to the studio for 3 hours, I make these big sonic boom sounds, they put some drums over it, and they back a Brinks truck up to my house. Like, I'm not mad at her for that or the fact that that happens. Good for her. But
yeah, it's really true. Like, I'm not, it's fine. Like, great. And she, you know what? Cash those checks from The Voice or whatever. Oh, I'm sorry to say, she divorced Jordan Bratman, but now she's engaged to someone else. So see, fine.
Okay.
Get it, girl.
But it's, I mean, Jesus, The Voice is like the divorce maker, but I'm sure it wasn't that. But it's also like, I think there's this sense on her part that she's supposed to appear as though she's trying to push boundaries or explore a different genre, when in fact, she's like, whatever, which is also fine.
Yeah, okay, that's another perfect segue.
The world needs C+ students too, even at your school.
And you know what? Seriously, I think we've given this perhaps soft compliment to other people. I can't remember now when, but we did recently.
Belinda Carlisle.
Yes, being average is fine. And Christina Aguilera's voice is so much better than Belinda Carlisle's.
Yeah,
but like,
well, yes, I mean, sorry.
But you don't have to front like you're a boundary breaker if you're just doing your shit. And I think that's a perfect segue into Candyman, the other song I wanted to clip from the Back to Basics album. This was the album's third single, and it wasn't as big of a hit. Ain't No Other Man reached number 6, and P.S. was co-written by Cara DioGuardi. I just think we need to mention that.
Oh, yeah. Hey, girl.
Hey, lady. Then the follow-up single, Hurt, made it to number 19, co-written by Linda Perry. And then we get to this song, Candyman, which peaked in the top 30, but, you know, still. But this is a song where I think that she is trying hard to continue to push her persona as some sort of sexual provocateur, but then also stick it into the 40s template. And well, I have more to say, but let's listen to the clip first. We drank champagne and we danced all night. We shook the paparazzi for a big surprise.
Yeah.
I feel like, Sarah, the reason I wanted to talk about this, you've actually touched on already, which is just do a little less and this song would be better. It's so busy, but there's so much potential inside of it. She's doing all three of the Andrews Sisters harmonies there, and she's scatting pretty effectively, and it's, but like, you can't really focus on that because there's all this other shit on the song. So we've expressed the frustration about that, but I just felt like this was a good example.
Yeah, I think this definitely backs up my point, which was about Ain't No Other Man initially, that it's like, don't do more than you have to so that you can look like you're doing more than you really want to.
Oh my God. That's deep. You should put that on a accessories poster with a picture of a small gibbon trying to climb an enormous tree or something.
Or like one kitten is sleeping and the other one is staring forlornly at the camera. Like, look, the sleeping one got this knocked.
Exactly. Oh my God. Sarah, I think that
quit looking busy, girl. Come on.
That folky wisdom is almost, I don't know what else there is to say. Christina, quit looking busy.
Yeah.
Church bells ringing, I heard a choir singing, I saw my love walk down the aisle on her finger, he placed.
Y'all, Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs is hosted by Mark Blankenship, a.k.a. me, and Sarah D. Bunting. And it's edited by Sarah D. Bunting as well. Do you want to talk to Mark and Sarah about song requests, ads, or birthday readings? Email us at talkaboutsongs@gmail.com, tweet us at TalkSongs, or find us on Facebook at facebook.com/mastus.podcast. To become a supporter and producer of this podcast, visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/mastus, where you can get access to all kinds of cool bonus content and vote in our ranking episodes. Thanks for listening.
All I could do was cry.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.